This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, January 8th, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Christina Thomas. AETN, Fayetteville Public Library, and KUAF invite the public for a free screening of Soul Food Junkies as part of Community Cinema Sunday. It's this Sunday, January 13th at 2 p.m. at the Fayetteville Public Library. In this film, the soul food culinary tradition is examined for both its significance and its consequences. AETN.com/communitycinema for more information.
KUAF's own Molly Ron will moderate that as well. That's right. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, a Northwest Arkansas native is helping create the urban landscape of New York City. Jacqueline Froelich talks to a Springdale native who is the principal urban designer for the Big Apple.
And we fill up the Furman Garner Performance Studio with sound. Adams Collins brought his vibraphones and band to KUAF yesterday to play some music and to talk about his CD release party. It's this Thursday night in Fayetteville.
But first, a new report says Arkansas has had the fourth fastest rate of immigrant population growth over a 10-year period beginning in 2000. The Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation released the report earlier this morning during simultaneous press conferences in Springdale and Little Rock. Cherise Y. West Scannelbury, the president and CEO of the Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation, says the report indicates the growing immigrant population has had a positive impact on Arkansas.
The findings of the study is that immigrants have a positive economic and social impact on our communities and in our economy. We also found in our study that immigrants are now keeping Arkansas's economy vibrant and keeping it competitive.
The report is contained in three volumes. Randy Capps, one of the authors of the report, says while the 82% growth in the immigrant population in Arkansas between 2000 and 2010 is one of the highest rates in the United States, the overall immigrant population in Arkansas remains small.
Among all the states, Arkansas ranked fourth in terms of the pace of immigrant population growth between 2000 and 2010 with an 82% growth rate. But at the same time, immigrants are only about 5% of the state's population. This is well below the national average of 13%.
We'll have much more about the report that was released earlier today on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large.
The city of Fayetteville has been named one of the most beautiful communities in America by the nonprofit America in Bloom. In its 2012 award winners, the organization named Fayetteville the winner in the category of cities with a population between 50,000 and 100,000. But the city also received a Criteria Award for its heritage preservation. And Fayetteville A&P Commission Director Marilyn Hefner received the John R. Holmes Community Champion Award. According to its website, America in Bloom promotes nationwide beautification through education and community involvement and encourages the use of flowers, plants, trees, and other environmental and lifestyle enhancements.
Republican leaders Representative Davey Carter and Senator Michael Lamoureux met with reporters yesterday in Little Rock. Roby Brock with Talk Business was among the reporters at the meeting.
They both said that they are willing to spend all of the surplus money and all of the projected growth money in state government to shore up the Medicaid program if that meant keeping nursing home cuts from happening in the state. That's the first time we've heard them really discuss that as a possibility.
Roby Brock says he sees cooperation between two-term Governor Mike Beebe, a Democrat, with Republican majorities in both chambers of the legislature when the legislature convenes later this month.
Fort Smith's Board of Directors are holding a special meeting in conjunction with its regular study session at this noon hour. The purpose of the special meeting is to consider the purchase of the Bell Grove Center at 622 North 7th Street. The city is considering the purchase to create a recreation center that would be under the direction of the city's Parks and Recreation Division. Parks and Recreation Director Mike Alsup says that the city has had its eye on the property for some time.
We had looked at it, considered it back 5 or 6 years ago before the economy went into the recession and our funding was reduced, so noticed it was still for sale. So I called the realtor and looked at it this summer and made a proposal in my budget, but at the time the funding just wasn't there, and they are planning on auctioning the property next week. But they're still taking offers, so we met with the Girls Inc. Representatives and made an offer to them, and they've accepted that.
Alsup says that the potential property purchase is advantageous because the city doesn't currently have any all-ages recreational facilities.
We have one at Girls Incorporated facility. We have several Boys and Girls Clubs. They all deal with the children and youth of our community, but there's really nothing for the adults to use. So this facility will be able to be used by the adults and as well as the youth and the children. And this facility is a couple of miles from the closest Boys and Girls Club, and there are two elementary schools and a junior high that are all closer to this facility than they are at the Boys and Girls Club that's a couple of miles away.
In addition, Alsup says that the facility is strategically well-placed, considering its location in the downtown historic district and its close proximity to Howard and Tiles Elementary and Darby Junior High Schools. If city directors approve the purchase, the facility will cost the city just over $100,000. But necessary renovations, including replacing the roof, bringing the facility's pool up to code, renovating restrooms throughout the building, and repairing water damage. Those renovations could cost an estimated $1.4 million.
Overcast with rain tonight throughout the KUAF listening area. Thunderstorms and a 60% chance of rain after midnight. Lows will be in the upper 30s in northwest Arkansas, mid-40s tonight in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, overcast, 70% chance of rain, mid-50s for highs tomorrow in northwest Arkansas. For the River Valley tomorrow, some early morning fog and about a 100% chance of rain. Highs, lower 50s tomorrow for the Arkansas River Valley. And for Wednesday night, 90% chance of rain and fog overnight. Otherwise overcast, lows between 45 and 50 throughout the entire region.
This is Ozarks at Large. It's always fun to report the local boy or girl makes good feature, and in this case, we're talking about Charles McKinney, a native of Springdale who grew up to become principal urban designer for the City of New York Parks and Recreation. He occasionally comes home for the holidays, and this year, Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich invited him to walk and talk about his city life.
The day before Christmas was cold and gloomy, but Charles McKinney was dressed for it, wearing a puffy black down parka, perfect for a short hike along the Fayetteville Trail, just down the hill from the radio station.
The nice thing about Fayetteville is there is this characteristic old houses that are a little worn, with real trees.
Now that's exactly what a trained architect with urban landscape proclivities might say, and it was growing up on the hills of northwest Arkansas that inspired him most.
I grew up in Springdale. My grandfather ran the Mount Sequoia, the church camp here. So that was a pretty formative experience because he was a bit of a philosopher and also a carpenter. And when summer came, then I would be able to have the run of Mount Sequoia.
The forested Mount Sequoia Retreat Center just east of downtown Fayetteville made a big impression, evidently, even though young Charles McKinney matriculated into architecture school at the local university, from which he graduated in 1980. He instead, coached by a mentor, pursued a master's in urban design at City College of New York, where he scored a paid internship in the Parks and Recreation Department.
It paid enough for my apartment, which was a fifth floor walk up, 82nd and York, and working hard in school, and I worked hard at the Parks Department, and I worked harder than anyone because I had that Arkansas work ethic.
He clearly acquired his work ethic from his dad, Charles McKinney Sr., a highly regarded druggist and longtime mayor of Springdale, who passed away in 1973. His mom is gone too, but his siblings continue to live here in northwest Arkansas. His graduate school internship led to a position as master planner for New York City's park system, focused on the restoration of Riverside Park, and McKinney called for public participation by the local community. The four-mile-long parcel from Lincoln Center to the George Washington Bridge along the Hudson River is said to be Manhattan's most spectacular waterfront park.
My education was architecture, not landscape architecture, but I was always more interested in the space in between the buildings. Really treasure that, early experience, because together we made a master plan that had the confidence of the community and therefore won easy funding from the elected officials.
first established in 1875 by Frederick Law Olmsted, the founder of American landscape architecture and designer of Central Park. Riverside Park was later improved upon by master builder Robert Moses during the Works Progress Administration. Over the eras, the sloping park has historically provided tranquil haven for New York City dwellers.
But as time went by, there were no people to maintain it, and the park was mostly bare. And the elm trees that were on Riverside Drive, this beautiful boulevard, were all dying, and they would have all died had there not been a citizens' organization, the Friends of Riverside Park, to save them. So they saved these trees, and they turned up the heat on the elected officials to do something about this resource.
And public participation and community vision continues to be a central organizing principle for Charles McKinney, who works to connect parks to neighborhoods, creating safe, accessible, and relevant spaces for local culture while protecting the natural environment. After that huge venture, Charles McKinney was ready for a break and applied for and received a Loeb Fellowship at Harvard University for a year. But when he returned to Manhattan, he had to retool.
Tried to come back as the chief of design, and they hired someone else. And then that person left, and they hired me the second time. So for 4 years during the Bloomberg administration, the really peak period of the Parks Department, where the mayor put, well, we did our plan 2030. That means we're going to plan for another 1 million people. And we wanted a playground within a 5-minute walk of every neighborhood. We wanted to complete our regional parks. We wanted to plant 1 million trees. And he also had an interest in design excellence. So we were able to pick up some new designers to do some major new parks that looked like the 21st century.
The initial targeted annual budget was $200 million, McKinney said. The ambitious year-long Northern Manhattan Parks 2030 Master Plan, led by now principal urban designer Charles McKinney, covers 678 acres of parkland, featuring forests, wetlands, saltwater marshes, and 9 miles of waterfront, inhabited by 250,000 people.
So the neat thing I learned from the mayor is that this is an investment. And whenever we noticed that whenever we built a new park, that we built the investor confidence across the street. So you would have people who are willing to invest then in their apartment buildings. And the parks is a real low-cost way to increase investor confidence. And that is so important when people have their doubts.
One example is the High Line, a nearly 2-mile-long abandoned elevated railway emancipated by city planners and local landholders as public space and trail 10 years ago on Manhattan's west side. The Design Trust for Public Space, based in New York City, was a collaborator on the High Line project. Susan Chin is the new executive director. She and Charles McKinney also happen to be husband and wife. Previously, Susan served for 23 years as Assistant Commissioner of Capital Projects at the New York City Department of Cultural Affairs, guiding a billion-dollar capital program for over 200 cultural institutions across 5 New York City boroughs. Back in 2008, Charles McKinney collaborated with the Design Trust for Public Space on a 4-year-long production of a 21st Century Parks Design Manual, a blueprint for sustainable park design, construction, and maintenance, one of the first of its kind. The couple keep an apartment in the city, and McKinney's daily commute to work is really kind of wonderful.
Our office is at 64th and 5th, right inside Central Park, right next to the Children's Zoo and the Arsenal. The Arsenal was there before Central Park. I feel lucky every day. I get on the train at 103rd Street, where Susan and I live, on the west side on Riverside Drive. And I ride with her to 72nd Street. I give her a little kiss on the train, if I can reach her. And then I'll get off and I walk from there across 72nd Street through Strawberry Field. And then I walk under the little Delacorte clock by the zoo that has usually already chimed 9 o'clock. I try to be there, but it's usually I've heard it ring already, and then around and under the locust trees, and then up the marble stairs into the building.
Charles McKinney looks up at the trees surrounding us, many broken from the massive ice storm of 2009. Now a tangle of invasive species, another kind of insurgence, taking place on urban forests, he said.
The park, current park that I'm working on, Van Cortlandt Park, has the oldest successional piece of forest in New York City, highly threatened now with Norway maples and bittersweet and multiflora rose. And it is a full-time job for five or six people to just keep it stable. And the master plan we're preparing says we want 100 people for a year to get that stuff out of there, or else we're going to lose it in 20 years. The invasive species are green, but they are devastating.
Helping Charles McKinney and park staff keep invasive plants and trees at bay are a trove of New York City volunteers. McKinney said any municipal leader listening to this story should take note, calling on local residents to adopt a park.
I am a big believer in volunteerism. I have, in Riverside Park, we had 80 sites that were adopted. I have a two-block site that I take care of, and I can keep my invasive species under control, and it's a complete joy. I don't belong to a gym. I do my gardening.
Charles McKinney said this was his first time to walk on the Fayetteville City Trail, now part of an ambitious 36-mile-long Razorback Greenway Trail complex, reaching from South Fayetteville north to Lake Bella Vista.
If you allow me to say, I think that's incredibly heroic. It's just so far-thinking, and I have to say that new path around the Fayetteville Lake and the Botanical Garden and I understand there's some property being acquired up on Mount Sequoia. So those pieces, once they're acquired, these opportunities come and then they're gone.
McKinney travels and lectures widely about his life's work, encouraging other urban planners to adopt sustainable and collectivist parks practices. In the magazine Landscape Architecture, summer 2010 edition, Charles McKinney was quoted as saying that landscape architects need to play a greater leadership role in the ecological health of American cities and the ecological services that parks can provide. And they are fortunate to have Ozarks native Charles McKinney and his sustainable New York City public parks as a template. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
If you'd like to learn more about the work of Charles McKinney, you can just search the New York City Department of Parks and Recreation.
I'm Ira Glass, and we got a tip at our show, This American Life, this week that a pork processor was taking the very bottom of a pig's intestines, the rectum, and slicing it into rings and selling that product as imitation calamari. Can it be true? Well, we investigated, including a taste test.
This was calamari.
Porky doppelgangers. This week.
This American Life, Saturday morning at 6 and Sunday morning at 10, right here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
And later on this edition of Ozarks. Adams Collins and his bandmates, tuning up there, will play live in the Furman Garner Performance Studio. His new CD, Coffee Pot, will be released at a concert Thursday night at Scarpino's in downtown Fayetteville.
Today's programming is brought to you in part by our day sponsor, Walt Manger, who says 78 years ago today, Elvis Aaron Presley was born to Vernon Elvis and Gladys Love Presley in Tupelo, Mississippi. If you see the King of Rock and Roll today, wish him a happy birthday.
It is Tuesday, January 8th, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us is Becca Martin Brown. She's features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Aren't you glad we don't write many checks anymore?
Although, I think if we wrote checks, it would be quicker for me to get the year in my head. Because I don't write checks at all anymore, I rarely write the year.
I'm kind of already, just because we write down the kind of the layout for the shows,
sure.
And I am kind of already in the habit of it already.
Oh, good. good.
I know.
Well, somebody should know where we are.
Yeah.
And it's Christina.
Yes, well, that's good.
Okay, tonight, 6 o'clock at the Fayetteville Public Library, the first in a series of programs for writers presented by the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pen.
Yes.
Tonight's portion of it is called Make 'em Smell the Coffee, Creating a Sense of Place.
Now, my folks at the library across the street tell me this one is now
sold out.
Sold out.
Or full.
Full, right.
Because I think it's
right.
free.
The registration has been. But keep that in mind when the next one comes around.
So we'll look ahead on their calendar.
Right.
Not sold out tonight is the musical version of Catch Me If You Can at the Walton Arts Center. You know the story. Guy who forged millions of dollars worth of checks, pretended to be a pilot.
And a doctor.
Reformed and became a consultant to the FBI and wrote an autobiography called Catch Me If You Can, which then became a movie, which then became a Broadway musical, which is now here. It debuted in 2011 and had 4 Tony Award nominations.
Right.
7 o'clock tonight at the Walton Arts Center. Tickets start at $39.
Okay.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
As Becca just mentioned, Catch Me If You Can opens tonight at Walton Arts Center. The Technicolor musical uses the true story of a legendary forger, Frank Abagnale Jr., as inspiration. Much like the Steven Spielberg movie of the same name, the stage production allows the audience to see not only the exploits of Frank Abagnale, but the FBI agent in pursuit, Carl Hanratty. The musical takes full advantage of the high-flying era of commercial flight in the 1960s, when passengers dressed up for their flights, and being a pilot or stewardess, as was the common term then, was seen as a ticket to adventure. Last week, I reached Merritt David Janes, the actor who portrays Carl Hanratty, the by-the-book federal agent trying to apprehend Frank Abagnale. Merritt David Janes has been at Walton Arts Center before as part of the touring cast of Beauty and the Beast. He's a graduate of the Circle in the Square, a school with famous alums like Philip Seymour Hoffman. And last week, he told me that playing a button-down character like Carl Hanratty in a lavish musical is quite the treat.
That actually helps me play him more, I think. He's a very, when I think of him being by the book, that means he's absolutely driven to accomplish what he sets out to accomplish in his job. So, you know, that's great information about the character, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it makes it easier to portray him knowing that he's an absolute by the book guy. I don't think he's an easy. No character is easy to portray because we have to keep looking for all these, you know, all these different circumstances and how they lead into one another, and in order to make them, you know, seem believable. And in this case, it's extra important because it actually happened.
Of course, this was a role that was in Broadway. Norbert Leo Butz won a Tony and a Drama Desk Award. Did you happen to see the production when it was on Broadway?
You know, I unfortunately didn't. I've been on tour for the last 5 years, and I have not been able to see many shows back home. But I did see a recording of Norbert's work, and I thought he's, you know, just absolutely fantastic. And, you know, of course, Mr. DiCaprio's work in the in the movie, I thought was really fantastic, as well as Tom Hanks. You know, when you look at Tom and you look at Norbert and you look at myself, these are each very different versions of this character. And the reason that is because, you know, we as actors, when you're trying to identify with the circumstances of each character, we can't forget ourselves, you know, and what we bring to the table. And we have to act as though this were happening to us as well. So it's kind of like making these two parallel lines meet, one being the actor and one being the character.
I know you're an alum of Circle in the Square. I'm just curious what classes and what life is like at that institution.
Well, I call it the Hogwarts School of Theater. It's got a lot of it's a great school, a lot of fantastic teachers, and they have a lot of different perspectives. So they really bring a variety of perspectives regarding the world of theater. And, you go through each class, and one class you may be experiencing one perspective. You go to your next class, and it may seem contradicting, but really it's just they tell you at the beginning you have your bag of tools, and by the end of the time that you're there, hopefully you have a lot more tools in your bag.
This will actually be a return for you to Walton Arts Center.
Yes, it will. I was there with Beauty and the Beast.
When you're backstage, and as you mentioned, you've been in many productions, you've been touring, it seems like nonstop if you look at your resume. When you come back to a venue, do you recognize it, or are you at so many and working so hard that they begin to blend together?
Well, I do recognize them. Sometimes it takes me a little while. It's kind of like a deja vu. I feel like Jason Bourne when I go back, except I'm not like a CIA agent. I'm an actor. I remember Fayetteville. We stayed in this house that was like way up in the country. We rented the house. It was, I think, the professor of architecture at the university there. It was his house, and I remember that this house was, it was a road that turned into a dirt road that turned into a narrow dirt road that turned into a goat path, and we barely got the car up. And, we would go back and forth every day, and the rest of the cast was staying closer to the theater, closer to the campus there, and I'm really looking forward to doing that this time.
Merritt David James portrays FBI agent Carl Hanratty in the musical Catch Me If You Can. The production opens a 6-day, 8-show run at Walton Arts Center tonight. You can learn more at waltonartscenter.org.
As a result of the Civil War, about one out of every three people in the South were suddenly freed from slavery. Bruce Levine writes about why the Civil War was America's second revolution and how it transformed the South and American politics in his new book, The Fall of the House of Dixie. We'll talk with Levine on the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air tonight at 6 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. There is something now called the winter TV season. No longer is it only in the fall when new or eagerly anticipated returning shows are on the schedule. Monday night, PBS began the third season of Downton Abbey. Later this month, the same network begins the 3-part series, The Abolitionists. Other favorites coming back include Merlin on BBC America, Smash on NBC, AMC blockbusters Breaking Bad and Walking Dead eventually will be back, and new shows like Deception and Monday Mornings, a medical drama from David E. Kelley, are set to debut. In all, more than 100 new and returning shows will be offered up to viewers in the next few weeks and months. Wayne Bell is here to help us navigate through the clogged TV grid. What are you looking forward to?
It's weird. It used to be spring was a time to just pick up what left off from fall. But now a lot of shows just debut spring or spring only. There's shows out there that are fall only, like Homeland, and then there's shows that are spring only. And so it's very strange to see that phenomenon. But, I think it's coming up with American Idol really started it by doing a January preview every year. And it seems to be working.
Well, and American Idol for its first 6 or 7 years was the most watched show. Mm-hmm. So Fox would always get this ratings boost right in the middle of what was the traditional season. Now you just... Everyone has something new. So what are you looking forward to?
Well, I would say the thing that I'm looking most forward to, a few, would be Girls on HBO.
Right.
Judd Apatow and Lena Dunham's series, which is coming back for its second season later this month. And Justified on FX is a show that I like a lot. It's coming for its fourth season. Downton Abbey just debuted this week and has got really great reviews for its third season.
Now, of course, it's already run in England. Have you seen the third season already?
I have.
And did you enjoyed it?
Yeah, it's a lot better than the second season, which, you know, I liked parts of, but then there were parts of it that were very soap opera-y. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to see the fact that they've kind of gone back to their roots for the third year.
With Shirley MacLaine.
Shirley MacLaine does come in efficiently for a couple of episodes, and that's always great to see. And then there's some other shows that come out in January, which are either returning or new, like Shameless with William H. Macy,
right.
and Emmy Rossum.
That's on Showtime, I believe.
Yep. Enlightened, the HBO show, which a lot of people either love or hate.
I've been trying to catch up on that, and I was under the assumption it was a comedy, and it does make you laugh at times, but it makes you cringe more often. Not to say it's a bad show,
yeah.
But it's not an easy watch.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with that. It's not getting the heat of Girls or some
right.
of their other stuff. House of Lies on Showtime is well received, I guess. And then you've got some new stuff, like the CW is starting The Carrie Diaries, which makes me cringe just thinking about it.
What are The Carrie Diaries?
Well, it's Carrie Bradshaw from when she was in junior high.
No. It's yeah. a prequel to Sex and the City?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that makes me cringe. And I'm the biggest Sex and the City fan in the world. But, you know, it's based on the book of her growing up, you know. And so none of your favorite characters are there.
This is before she met Samantha.
Oh, yeah. So I that makes me want to heave. and then Project Runway comes back for its 50th season at the end of the month. And Dallas, the TNT show that had a big debut last summer,
right.
comes back, and that's going to be really interesting to see how they deal with the Larry Hagman situation.
And he was alive to film some of the episodes for this season, was he not?
He was, and from what I have read and understand, they based a great deal of the second season around him, and then it was caught them off guard. And then in February, Smash is coming right. back, retooled.
That's always whenever you hear a network has retooled something, that means
well, there were some problems with Smash the first year. As great and as great production value as there were some problems. So hopefully they've rectified it, because it does have a lot of potential. Community comes back on February 7th.
Finally, my favorite show.
Enjoy it while you have it.
I know this will probably be the last.
And then in March, we get the 20th season of All-Star Celebrity Apprentice.
And that one, I don't know if you're kidding. That's been on a long time.
It has been on a long time. So, I mean, it's a busy period with some really good television. Plus, we don't even know, you know, what's going to take off, what's going to be the next big thing.
Before the month ends, 30 Rock will end as well. Its last show is January 31st.
Well, for people who are big entertainment fans, this is a big week, because everything's been sped up this year. So Thursday, the Oscar nominations come out. It seems like they used to come out around Valentine's Day,
right.
and now they're coming out on the 10th. I mean, that's crazy. Give you even less time to watch movies that aren't here yet.
And it could be up to 10 movies again this year?
Could be up to 10 if they get that many people who have that much support around them. The Golden Globes are this weekend. The Broadcast Film Critics are this weekend. So everything really kicks into gear, and we'll have a pretty good idea next Monday, you know, was there a big consensus, you know, what happened? So
Thursday morning, early Thursday morning, the Oscar nominations.
Yep. And then Thursday night, you've got your Broadcast Film Critics. Sunday, you've got the Golden Globes. Today, the DGA announces. So
the DGA.
The Directors Guild. So, you know. It's a time to catch up on these movies, and we're going to be getting more later this month, like Zero Dark Thirty. And
plenty of TV to catch up on.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
We're inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio, and with us is Adams Collins. Adams, welcome.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
You're here because your brand new CD, Coffee Pot, has literally just come into your hands, hasn't it?
Yes. I just came home this afternoon, and they were sitting on my porch.
And it's important that you have these.
Yeah, it was a big relief since the CD release is occurring in 3 days. I was pretty nervous, but it made it, so we're okay.
Thursday night
at Scarpino's down on West Street. We'll start at 8 o'clock, and it's a donation at the door, and the CDs will sell for $5. And I just want everybody to be able to come out who wants to come. I have friends ranging from poor musicians to, older professional people, and so I just would like the monetary support so I can pay my band, help fund the CD, but also, more importantly, I just want people to come out and enjoy the music and have a good time.
Well, and you play the vibraphone?
That is correct. Okay. I get a lot of questions about what it's called. It's often referred to as a xylophone, which is the same family of instruments. You have xylophone, marimba, vibraphone, and bells, and they're all played with mallets and have bars that you strike. But the vibraphone in particular has metal bars. It's three octaves. It has a sustain pedal similar to a piano. It's commonly used for jazz.
You're in Arkansas. You're a Fayetteville native, correct?
It's true. Yeah, born, raised, and educated.
But you've been a lot of other places recently.
Yes. I did my undergraduate here in music education, and was playing gigs for about a year and a half after I finished, and then I moved to Boulder, Colorado, and pursued a master's degree in jazz studies. And when I finished that, I spent about 3 months writing and rehearsing and recording this CD that I'm just now releasing. And I had a band and had gotten a teaching position at an arts school out in Boulder. And I left to go to Hawaii to decompress for a month. And while I was out there, I just realized that I wasn't quite ready for a professional life yet, and was kind of interested in developing other areas of my life and kind of letting music rest for a bit. So I ended up staying out of the country. I left for New Zealand a few weeks after I made the decision and stayed gone for about 16 months and traveled around.
Had a month-long gig in Thailand, is that right?
Yep. I was traveling with a buddy at this point on my trip who played a little bit of mandolin, and I had a banjo that I had been learning to play while I was traveling. You know, like we spent a lot of time sitting on the side of the road hitchhiking, or, you know, there was just a lot of downtime. And so we'd just sit together and pick tunes. You know, we learned a bunch of Hank Williams stuff, and he was a big Bob Dylan fan, you know. And so we learned some folk music and some bluegrass, and we did a lot of busking. And we arrived in Thailand on New Year's. We arrived in this island of Koh Chang close to Cambodia on New Year's Eve, and we're walking through this little resort village on the beach. They weren't resorts. They're like these tiny little bungalow guest house, you know, open air restaurant type places. And every bed was sold in this place. You know, it was New Year's Eve, and we had just gotten there, and we were walking through the streets with our instruments, and a restaurant owner was just standing in front of his restaurant and saw us and called us over and was excited. You know, we had big beards, looked, you know, homeless, like American hillbillies or something, and invited us in and asked us to play some music, and we did, and he enjoyed it, and invited us to stay indefinitely, and gave us a room and fed us and paid us a little bit of money every day. And in exchange, we played music in the restaurant 2 or 3 hours a night, and we did it for about 3 or 4 weeks. And it was great. I learned a lot, and, you know, got developed my banjo playing abilities and started singing tunes, and it was real fun.
Well, and the cover of your CD is actually you on your travels, right? It's you underneath kind of a teal green concrete shell.
Uh-huh. Yep. Last summer, I went over to Europe. It's a funny story. While I was on my first international trip, roaming around with my friend, we ran into this German couple down on the South Island of New Zealand, staying in this hostel, and hung out with them. They were cool, and we bumped into them a few other times when we were traveling around New Zealand, and became friends with them. And they would always say, it's like, yeah, we're going to get married, and when we get married, we want you guys to come play our wedding. And we're like, yeah, sure, sure, that'll be great. And, you know, we get home, and a couple years pass, and then, yeah, last fall, I get an email from them, and they're like, we're getting married, you know? It's like, we're buying your plane tickets. You guys are coming over to wow. Berlin to play at our wedding. And so we're like, okay. And went over there and had a great time. You know, it was real interesting to experience, like, a German wedding. We were the only non-Germans there. Afterwards, my girlfriend and myself bought some cheap, crappy bicycles from a flea market and just started riding north. And rode up to Oslo in Norway was our kind of final destination. That was a photo when we were crossing through Denmark, just kind of in a rural spot. It was real flat and extremely windy. And so the little bus stops had these funny-looking mushroom shelter shells. So that's what that photo is from.
You're going to play a couple of tunes with your bandmates here in a minute, but I want to ask you about one. It's the first song on the new CD. The CD is called Coffee Pot Bounce.
Yeah.
I love that. It's a pretty cool tune. Cool jazz.
Jazz is an interesting genre to be working and playing in because it's such a broad idea, you know. I mean, the tradition, you know, goes back into the 20s, and there's all these different periods of styles that it's developed through, and nowadays it's just even more diverse, and there's a lot of people that are preserving the different periods or drawing upon these different styles and creating new styles. And my first attraction to music was, you know, I just wanted to be a rock star, you know, and I didn't really know much about how to rock. I bought a guitar, but I couldn't ever really play it very well. And my parents had me in piano lessons from when I was young, so I had a good fundamental knowledge of music and, you know, the sound of it, and ended up going into band programs. So when I, you know, started writing music, I'd been studying jazz, learning how to play straight ahead, bebop kind of stuff, and was excited about fusion music because it was kind of like rock jazz, and was listening to a lot of that, and I was trying to, when I first started writing, was trying to write music that I thought was kind of like rock music, that I could go into bars and be cool, you know, and talk to girls and get free drinks and, you know, feel like a rock star even though I was playing jazz. And that was kind of where I started writing. And then after, you know, I burned off all of that, you know, younger vigor and ambition towards being a rock star, I just started writing music based off of what I would hear. I would sit at the piano and I've been around and studied a lot of percussion and different styles, and so I try and find cool textures and rhythm. And then through jazz studies, I started getting exposed to harmony and this rich deep sea of the infinite possibilities of what you can do with harmony. And so I bring both of those into my composing, and then I also play this instrument, which is kind of like a combination of a drum set and a piano. And it really does specific things very well. It's sometimes I feel like it's a little bit limited in what it can do, but what it does do, it does it very well.
Who is with you here in the Furman Garner Performance Studio?
I've got a lot of good buddies here. Drew Packard and Garrett Jones. I've known since a long time. Drew's also a Fayetteville guy. Garrett was just up at the road in Bentonville, Rogers. So we were all an undergraduate around the same time, and suffered through early gigs playing jazz when we didn't really know what we were doing. Was that Jam and Java up on the square? We used to do a jam session on Monday nights forever. Brandon was really nice about letting us come up and play. And, I think my parents and my girlfriend at the time were the only ones who ever came. And we just, try and read songs out of the fake book and sound like jazz musicians. And, over the years, even when we go and come, we always reconnect and show each other the music that we've been working on together, or separately, excuse me, and then, share with each other and work on it together. Nathan McLeod on horns. Nathan and I have known each other since we were 6 or 7. We went to elementary school together. And even before we started playing music, we were Ninja Turtles running through the woods. And then my newest friend, even though I've still known him for maybe 4 or 5 years, is Johnny Arredondo. Super great drummer that we were fortunate enough to pull out of Austin, and he's been up here off and on over the past few years. And yeah, super good guy, super great drummer. So yeah, it's like family. There's a lot of history between all of us musically and non-musically. So it's always cool to get to experience an event like this for me with these people that I've known for a long time.
Well, what are you going to play for us?
The first one I think we'll do is about the two sexiest barnyard animals, brown chicken, brown cow.
Thank you.
Yes, great. All right. Very good. So no weddings in Berlin Thursday, no busking in Thailand. You'll be at Scarpino's. And gentlemen, Garrett, Johnny, Drew, Nathan, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Adams Collins' latest CD is titled Coffee Pot. The release party is Thursday night at Scarpino's on West Avenue in Fayetteville. The CD will also be available next week at iTunes, Amazon, and CDBaby.com.
And Thursday on our program, we'll hear the other song the band played live in the Furman Garner Performance Studio during their visit yesterday. Accompanying Adams Collins in the studio, Garrett Jones bass, Drew Packard guitar, Nathan McLeod on horns, and Johnny Arredondo on drums.
I asked a trivia question on yesterday's edition of Ozarks, and I was kind of going out there a little bit because I'm not much of a sports fan.
But I love the question. You came in, you told me what you were going to ask, and I love this question.
Right. So the question was, since polls were started taken about college football teams in 1869.
Right, just soon after the Civil War this started.
Which college football team has won the most national championships?
Now, a lot of people answered what you would think they would answer, which is Alabama or Notre Dame, because they have the most in what's called the modern era since the 30s. But that's not what you asked.
No, I asked since 1869.
There is a bit of controversy between people who catalog this because of what polls count and what not. We say Yale. Many other people say Princeton. Regardless, they each have 28 or 27. Kristen Mitchell said Princeton with 28, which is observed by many college observers. Okay. So Kristen Mitchell, you were right with Princeton, 28 national championships since 1869.
So she won a Tim Ernst 2013 calendar, and I said two movie passes, but since she's the only winner, we'll give her four.
There you go. Way to listen, Kristen. And we'll be giving out a few. It's still 2013. We've got a few Tim Ernst calendars left, and we have several movie tickets, so we'll be doing that as well. This is KUAF 91.3 FM.
Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, and Potter.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Thanks so much for listening.